This week in Retronauts, Capcom gets horny on Maine. That's M-A-N-E. Hello, welcome to Retronauts, episode 476 by my math. And today we are talking about something scary, but also something a little randy. We're talking about Darkstalkers, the other Capcom fighting franchise that's kind of slipped into the background. But of course, it's as of this recording, it's very much in the news again because it's the centerpiece of the Capcom fighting collection. A sort of grab bag of, well, Capcom fighting games. So joining me today, oh, see, I always forget this part. I'm Diamond Fight, wannabe vampire, and I'm joined today by my guest in the UK. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Ant. I'm known on the internet as Tepid Snake, and I'm conducting a gloomy puppet show this evening. That's that's a joke for you vampire savior fans out there. Sorry, I'll see myself out.
No, that's good. We were going to mention that move for sure.
Good.
So, Darkstalkers, please, Ant, since you're here and you're my guest, why don't you tell us about when and where and how, however much you can remember, where did you first encounter the Darkstalkers?
My first Darkstalkers game was, of course, Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo. I didn't really have like a local arcades growing up, so I'd just see them when I saw them, and I never actually saw Darkstalkers in a proper arcade, but I got one of the home versions of Puzzle Fighter, and that has a bunch of Darkstalkers characters, as well as a character from Capcom's number one game, Cyberbots. So, you know, I had a vague idea of who they were, but then the first real Darkstalkers game I played was SNK versus Capcom on the Neo Geo Pocket Color.
Okay,
that has a bunch of Darkstalkers characters in it, and one of them is BB Hood, who I'd never seen before, and I was like, wow, that's the coolest fighting game character I've ever seen. What game is she from? So then I picked up the PS1 version of Darkstalkers 3, fell in love with it, and then I sort of worked my way backwards. So I kind of experienced the series completely the wrong way. But I can definitely appreciate the earlier titles, but Vampire Savior is like my favorite Capcom fighting game, so it has a special place in my heart.
If you fell in love with it, then it was the right way. But exactly, honestly, I think those compilations, they really, you know, the fact that Darkstalkers has so many characters in it, and we'll talk about all of them.
Good.
The fact that it has so many characters in it, and other games were able to sort of cherry pick just the weirdest, wildest ones that got people to go back and say, oh, wow, where did this person come from? They came from this lot of just wild boys and girls and other.
Yes. Everyone is represented in Darkstalkers.
Yes. So for me, I was there on day one, more or less. I was actually in college. I was in college in 1984. Yes. Mm-hmm. And my university had a game room, and this game room was my introduction to a lot of games. I know that was the first place I saw Primal Rage.
Oh, wow.
That was, yeah, that was the first place I probably saw like, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo and, you know, at least one of the Marvel crossover games. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I saw a lot of games in that game room, but by far the biggest, most memorable one for me was Darkstalkers. That was the first place I saw it. That became my main game for a while. Cause let me tell you, I didn't go to class. this was my first, you know, you do the math. This was my first round of college. I spent most of my time in that game room, and I spent most of my time in that game room playing Darkstalkers. So I got pretty good at it. I'll be honest. I got pretty good at it. I went through most of the roster learning as many characters as I possibly could. And that just became my thing.
I mean, their first mistake was putting a game room there. That's the big problem.
Let me tell you, this game room was right next to sort of the communal TV room. Because, you know, most of us didn't have TVs in our dorms at this point. So, like, when I went to this space, I was either in there playing video games or I was out in the TV room watching Animaniacs or syndicated reruns of Star Trek. So, yeah.
All part of a balanced education.
Really, I learned more in that building than I did in any classroom. I'll tell you right now. So yeah, that was it. That got me hooked, and I followed the series from that point on. And yeah, it was wondrous.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine like seeing it in 94 right as it came out, it making a big impression because of just its general presentation. I mean, it's what does it the note say? Like 4 times the amount of animation frames per character than like Super Yes. Turbo. That's wild. Yes.
Exactly. So yeah, obviously, you know, as indicated by past episodes, I was a big Street Fighter 2 fan. So coming from that game, and even, you know, even with my Neo Geo fandom, coming from the Neo Geo games, which looked amazing, mm-hmm. coming from that background, looking at Darkstalkers in 1994, my mind was blown. Yeah, I remember my initial thoughts were like, did Disney draw this? It looks like Disney to me. You know, which at the time, of course, was the highest praise I could possibly offer something. Oh, my God, this is like Disney, you know, and because, of course, Disney was in the middle of their renaissance and, you know, they were making, you know, theatrical movies that were, you know, being mm-hmm. nominated for Oscars. So I was looking at this game and I had my mouth at the floor and it was just astounding.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine that happening sort of back when it was new. And I mean, honestly, some of those sprites still hold up today.
Yes, well, Capcom did their best to make those sprites hold up for as long as possible.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get to Morrigan's sprite eventually, but there's yes. a reason they reused it. It's because it's good.
Yeah. No, they did the work. They did the work, and you don't throw that away. You don't throw that away. So what is Darkstalkers in the big picture? Well, Darkstalkers is a fighting game where the cast is mostly monsters. Not, oops, all monsters, but most of them are monsters and creatures. And as we have a quote here, it started out with more sort of yokai, which is sort of the traditional Japanese sort of spirits and monsters. I think yokai has become a more common term these days, thanks to Yokai Watch and just more general awareness of Japanese sort of superstitions. But I think probably in 1994, if you said the word yokai, I think most people would have just stared at you like, what?
Yeah, no, that's...
But yeah, we have a quote here from Noritaka Funemizu, a name we've heard a lot on the show before because he worked on Alpha and he worked on Street Fighter 3. He said, in the beginning, there were a lot of yokai, but we trimmed that number down because we realized most international players wouldn't be very familiar with them.
Yeah, one thing that I have heard is there's like different names for some of the characters between divisions, and yes. I seem to recall hearing that the international names came first, so it almost seems like they wanted sort of a kind of a wide appeal with the characters, you know, not just in Japan, but sort of international. They were sort of thinking that way even back then, in a sense.
They definitely had to self-edit, yes. We should actually, I didn't mention this already, so this series has a lot of names, and each game sort of has a new name. It doesn't really go yeah. 1, 2, 3.
No, it doesn't.
The original game was called Darkstalkers in most territories. In Japan, they just called it Vampire, which I think
yes.
it's a good name in that it sort of communicates that this is a game about supernatural stuff, mm-hmm. but it's also not a good name because A, that's very generic. We've got a lot of stuff with vampires in it. And B, there's really only one vampire in the original game, so I don't think it's a great name from that regard. No, so I think Darkstalkers is a better collective.
Yeah, it's it kind of encapsulates what they all are. Although I'm pretty sure some players imagine Morrigan is a vampire there if they don't know what a succubus is.
Yeah, I mean she's vampire adjacent, you know.
Yeah, right next to it. Yeah.
If I recall her original ending. She basically sucks Pyron dry. He gets all crusty. Right, yeah. So yeah. So she's into sucking, but maybe not blood, like essence or fire or whatever Pyron's made out of.
Something like that.
So we have a quote here from Junichi Ono, who was credited as a planner on the original game. He said, "We wanted to create a new, different style of versus fighting game. In the midst of our brainstorming, someone proposed, well, why not make it about monsters then? With monsters, we wouldn't have to create brand new characters from whole cloth, and we could use famous monster characters that people would already be familiar with." That said, they certainly had a lot of wild ideas. One of my favorites, though, from the rejected pile, speaking of yokai, is Nurikabe, which is literally like in Japanese, like wet wall or sort of slick wall. It's a wall. It doesn't actually move. So they said the designers liked that one because it wouldn't have to move, wouldn't have to be animated. It would just be this big ass wall that's always guarding, which
that's great.
Sounds funny for a fighting game, but I guess eventually they're like, oh, what does it do? Fall down?
Yeah.
And also I loved, you know, because if you're going classic monsters, someone's going to mention the Invisible Man. So they had an idea for an invisible character who all you could see was their hands. So again, animation wise, like all we got to do is hands.
They would have been the most exquisitely animated hands of all time, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Master Hand would have nothing on this guy, the two of them. But no, that didn't make it. Also, no, there was an old salaryman idea that doesn't sound that exciting. Itan Momen, which is basically literally like one bolt of cotton. I know that now because of the Yokai Watch version, which is called Itai Gomen, who apologizes for things. But yeah, I guess just a strip of cloth.
Yeah.
Sounds like they took those ideas and maybe worked them into Senko, but...
Yeah, maybe. I would have played as the wall, I'm just saying.
I wouldn't have not tried the wall, so I'll say that much. Well, since we're talking characters, let's go ahead and let's go into the cast of the original game, which, as we said, debuted in 1994 and later appeared on PS1 in 1996.
Yes.
So our lead character, more or less, is Dimitri. He's certainly the character that comes up first when you put your coin in. And he's a vampire, you know? I mean, I would say he's, how do I put this? His clothes look like they're painted on his body. His like his shirt has abs. His shirt
yes,
has abs.
Yes, it absolutely does.
He's kind of on fire. He's glowing. And one of the things I love about Dimitri is as he sort of attacks, as he does certain moves, you can see his sort of handsome bro visage disappear, and you see sort of the monster version of him like peek out for a few frames.
Yeah, I think that happens when he's blocking as well sometimes, but it's a good look. I always joke that Dimitri wanted to be the main character, but then Morrigan showed up and he was like, oh man, because he's in all the intros, but yes. So is Morrigan.
Exactly. And he's the only vampire we have in the original vampire.
He's what the game's named after.
Mm-hmm. So. But yes, there is Morrigan, and Morrigan is, aka Chesty LaRue. She's got, she's got a lot going on there. Officially, she is a succubus.
Yes, and that is correct.
Dimitri and Morrigan have a lot in common because they're kind of like, I sort of view them as the sort of you and Ken of this game because they both have the sort of standard fireball, uppercut. They don't have a roundhouse kick thing, but they both have sort of kick moves. In Dimitri's case, he teleports in and sort of drills down. Mm-hmm. And for Morgan's, she sort of flies off screen and sort of soars in.
Yeah.
And her legs sort of turn to a... So they both have like a drill attack.
Yeah, kick move. Yes. They definitely feel more distinct than Ryu and Ken did.
Yes.
Like, obviously, they were in Super Turbo, they were trying to make them a bit different. But in Morrigan and Dimitri definitely feel very distinct from one another, which I think was a good call. As for Morrigan, the first Darkstalkers has her with these baggy eyes, which is a good look. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. But I think they make good intro characters. Like if you're coming to this game
for sure.
from Street Fighter 2, and I'm pretty sure they're like when you put in coins, they're the default. Like here's the character you start with on the select screen. So it's like if you don't know what any of those people are, you could pick these two, and you'll get the gist of it.
They are absolutely the safest choices because some of the other characters are completely wild.
Mm. So
speaking of,
yeah, let's go through them. So we'll go through. Honestly, this is one of my favorites, Anacharis.
I love Anacharis. He's so cool. Yeah.
He's a mummy. He's a big, very big mummy. This is definitely one of the biggest sprites, I think, in any Capcom game at this point.
Yeah, this is like before X-Men Children of the Atom, so he was like the biggest. He was the largest lad.
Children of the Atom might have been late 93, so it's pretty close. He's close to Sentinel. I would say he's very much, he's kind of Sentinel adjacent, because he's very slow and he's very big. But the difference with him is that Anacharis can basically... he's almost like a shapeshifter. His sort of his body changes as he needs. When he jumps, his legs vanish, and he sort of like he doesn't quite dash as so much as he can sort of like hop midair. He can make more than one jump midair.
Yeah, his aerial movement is like very very strange, especially for 94. And
some of his punches and kicks sort of come from off screen.
Yes,
he's got he's got a big punch move that sort of he brings his two fists together and they sort of join and become the sort of giant coiled cobra that covers almost the entire screen.
Yeah, like I think the EX version just covers the entire screen. You can't.
Yeah, he drops sarcophagi.
Yes,
from above. Yeah, he can grab you and bring you into his coffin where he sort of messes you up and kicks you out. He's got helpers. He's got magic. He's got a move, one of my favorites, where he sort of spits out these little like ghost things. And if they hit you, you become a cute little character. Everyone has a unique character.
Yes.
And you can't attack anymore. You can just run and jump and try to avoid getting hit.
And I'm sure the animators loved that, the fact that they had to do one for every single character and every character they added in sequels.
Yep.
That would become a recurring theme. Oh boy. Yes, no, I Anna Karras plays so differently. He's really fun. He's awkward to get used to, but he's fun.
And so we should mention right away, so Anna Karras's credited designer is Takanori Kimoto. So he's also known as Kimo Kimo. He did a lot of graphics work on this game and other games in Capcom. He at this days he's a freelancer, so he works with basically whoever he hires him. Uh-huh. But I did like to point out that he would later marry Eri Nakamura, who's also a veteran artist at Capcom. She had some credits on Darkstalkers, but she's probably most famous these days for being the original voice of Chun-Li. She does the...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
In Street Fighter 2, she did all of Chun-Li's voices.
Wow.
But she also, she did work on Darkstalkers and other Capcom games. So the two of them have a lot of credits together, but he is... Mm. His name comes up with Anna Karras, so we have him to thank for it. So thank you.
Good.
Thank you, Kimo Kimo.
Thank you. Thank you.
So the next one, the most Japanese character I would say in the original game anyway, is Bishamon. He's literally a samurai ghost. He's a suit of armor that's got a magnificent face in the chest.
Yes, one of the great idol animations, that the face is just constantly snarling and great.
So he's got armor and he's got a body of sort of like bluish skin, depending what color you choose. But you get the sense that like the armor is really the one doing the business. And I think at least one of his victory poses is the body disappears and the armor just kind of floats around there and makes faces.
Mm-hmm.
I was a big Bishamon head at the time. Bishamon can throw his sword. He can sort of stun you. He's got an air fireball that sort of locks you in place. And then he can throw the sword, which is almost like a scorpion style. It brings you closer. You've got a dragon punch thing.
Thinking about it now, a lot of characters actually had air fireballs in this, because Morrigan's got one, Dimitri's got one. Oh, Pyron's got one, obviously, because he's the final boss. But no, it's you didn't see that as often back in 94. That was an Akuma thing.
Yeah, actually, when you look at Darkstalkers, a lot of things first appeared in Darkstalkers and then became normal in other Capcom fighting games. Certainly, I know air blocking... This game had air blocking. The original one had air blocking. And a lot of characters have moves that just work in the air just like they work on the ground. But in this case, Anna Karras and Bishamon, they have unique air fireballs. Like, you can't do them on the ground.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, like Anna Karras' sort of spirit attack only works in the air. And Anna Karras, he throws a sword on the ground, but in the air he has the spirits that come out and stun you.
Mm.
He also's got a big hand. He's got a big hand that comes out of his armor mouth.
Yes. Yeah, that's his command grab. He comes out the armor's mouth and squeezes the enemy.
Which I always liked because it was one of the rare moves. Bishamon, because he's got the sword and he's got the hand, he has moves that cut people in half. And if you win the match with one of those moves, they end up cut in half.
They
with
end.
Like a cartoon sort of like meat reddish overlay in the middle of their body.
Yeah. That's kind of the thing with the violence in the series. It's not like... It's a little gory, but it feels more like Tom and Jerry violence, kind of Looney Tunes-esque.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's cartoonish. This is post-Mortal Kombat, but it's definitely cartoonish. It's not there's a lot of blood here. You got a vampire, so it's gonna be blood, but it's not like gross. You know, there's no,
it's not. Bones, it's not over the top.
But yeah, big Bishamon fan. So who's next? Well, we're talking about the undead. Let's talk about Victor. Victor is basically a Frankenstein's monster.
Yes. And the notes here mention his most famous attribute, his butt.
Yeah, well, he's got what I like about Victor is he's got, you know, he's one of your bigger guys, but he's not quite a Zangief type because he's got a lot of sort of sliding moves, although he does have almost exactly like Zangief. He's got the sort of spinning punch move where he spins his fists.
Yeah, the lariat. Yeah.
Mm. But he's got a lot of sliding punches. And one of the things that's cool about Victor is like his body parts sort of exaggerate as he attacks. Mm,
that's right. So,
like if he punches out, his arm and fist grow very large. If he kicks, his leg grows really big. And you can see, like, I think it's his standing high kick where his leg goes up in the air. And like you can see the muscles ripple through his leg.
There's a lot of rippling and it's a lot of love went into them.
But also, and I think this is very clever, because we think of Frankenstein's monster, we think of the laboratory, we think of lightning. Mm. He's got electric moves. He's got electric charges.
Yeah.
Less so in the first game, but I believe in later games, if you just hold the button down, almost any move can generate an electric charge and shock the
opponent. Yeah, that's right. It's like if you hold it down for just a little longer, the electricity comes out and shocks the opponent. So it kind of gives him extra reach as well.
Yeah, which works for him. We have a quote here from Funimizu, one of the later quotes, but he said the designer was a woman, so I'm guessing it might be Eri Nakamura. Mm-hmm. And this is his words, she seems to have a thing for butts. Suddenly, Victor had a lot more moves that uses his butt. I know he's got a butt grab. Like, he literally clenches his cheeks.
Yeah, he's got a butt grab. It is lovingly animated. It's beautiful.
I know several stages you can see the ghost of his creator in the background. Yeah. Which,
you can also see, like, his corpse. It's kind of gross.
Yeah, his backgrounds have a lot of, I think, depending on the game, his backgrounds have a lot of, like, torture equipment and used tools and maybe an Iron Maiden somewhere. Like, he's...
Yeah. There's an entire torture chamber scene in Vampire Savior. It's the stage is literally called Forever Torment. That's good.
So, opposite of Torment, let's talk about Felicia, literal cat girl.
Yes.
And this is 1994, so this might have been my first cat girl. I know we're here on the internet where cat girls are, you know, lurk behind every corner. Hmm. But I think this might have been my first cat girl.
It was either her or the ones from Dominion Tank, at least for me.
Yes.
Felicia is a cat woman who wants to be a musical star, bless her. So like her early stages are all set in Las Vegas. Which is and they've got like cat signs in the background. She's
The music make cat sounds. Mm. I think eventually she just summons cats and they attack with her. Yeah,
that's right.
Her basic design is okay. We said at the top of the show, but we should say it again. This is gonna get a little blue, okay?
Yeah,
because Capcom definitely leaned into sexiness with this game. Felicia has cat ears, a cat tail. Big paws for hands and feet, and some furry outlines to cover anything that would get anyone in jail, and that's about it. She's naked.
That's pretty much it.
She is naked, and she's bouncy, very bouncy.
Yes, another lovingly animated character strike there.
Yeah, and so we've only got two women in the original game, and they're both very busty and very visible.
definitely. It's kind of weird seeing that costume on the kind of chibi-fied version in Puzzle Fighter, though. shouldn't she be wearing a bit more? No? Okay.
Also, unlike Street Fighter 2, they went ahead and, you know, in Street Fighter 2, when you get hit by a fire attack, everyone turned into the same sort of burning sprite.
Yes.
In Darkstalkers, everyone has a unique burning, like sort of burned sprite. It's very cartoonish, you know, singed hair, sort of gray, black skin. And in the case of Morrigan and Felicia, it's like you see them even more naked.
Yeah, I think Morrigan's trying to cover herself up with her wings that have turned to tans. And Yeah, they're unique burning sprites and unique electricity shock sprites as well. Mm-hmm. Again, something else for the animators to do every time they add a new character.
Yeah. It's a long, long list of work. Oh, we got this special, we got this special, we got this special. Oh, yeah. This special that transforms every character? Sure, sure, boss, no problem. But since you mentioned animators, I did want to hit up a quote from the next game, but we have Funimizu talking about Kimoto. He says, Kimoto is an idea man. His ideas are always giving the designers and programmers no end of trouble. He'll often draw things and bring them to us with no idea how they're supposed to be used. And, you know, my favorite is, one day, this is from Junichi Ono, one day I opened up the sprite data and there was just this giant coffin. Like, what the hell?
We might need it.
And they did. They used it.
Yeah. we better just have a giant coffin just in case, just to be sure. You never know.
So who knows how many of these things we have to thank/blame Kimo for.
Yeah. So much work put into these sprites. Bless them.
So back to the cast. Yeah,
yeah.
We've got Rikuo or Aluboth in Japanese. And at the time, I think this was probably more of a Creature of the Black Lagoon type. But these days, it's easy. He's in a Shape of Water. He's a Shape of Water guy. He's a handsome fish man. And what I love is in the game, he's very vain. Like he knows he's a handsome fish man.
He knows he's a very handsome fish man.
I think pop culture in general sort of caught up with him.
Yeah. The Western name is actually a reference to one of the actors in Creature from the Black Lagoon.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
It's Rico Browning, I think his name is. He's the guy who's in the suit. So you were on the money.
That's very clever. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I like him because he's got a lot of splish splash moves. He throws he creates water, he summons water. He can sort of transform his appendages into sort of like exoskeleton hard objects that,
yeah,
you know, beat you or poke you. I'm pretty sure he's got an infinite in the original game, or at least I've seen an infinite looping GIF on Tumblr that.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. He's like, I think he might be the only one in the original who can actually put characters in a dizzy state, because unlike Super Turbo, this game doesn't have like random dizzies. It's more like status effects, and that's actually one of the reasons I love these games, because I really hate random dizzies in fighting games. I'm one of those people. I'm like, no randomness. All must make sense. But he can like poison and kind of stun enemies briefly. So I think that's probably how the infinite happens. But
yeah, with one of the more spectacular moves, he sort of leans back and opens up like these gills on his chest.
Yeah, yeah.
And exhales this sort of poison gas. It's really, you know, it's not just like your standard fireball. It's like it's this entire unique animation. No one else has anything like this. And then, yeah, it dizzies them and this gives you a free hit or whatever.
Yeah, that's like he arches his whole body back. It's great animation again. But that's like one of the few dizzy states you can actually get.
Speaking of great animation, I shouldn't say that they're all great animation, but also as far as flexibility is concerned, we've got Lord Raptor, aka Zabel Zarok. I think this is the one Japanese game. This is one of the Japanese names that I think is better than our name. It's a zombie rock star.
Yes, he's one of my favorites. He's so cool. He's just a horrible zombie.
Right, but he's not a slow zombie. He's a cool, fast zombie.
He is.
He jumps, he flies, he's got an air sort of... He can sort of wiggle his legs cartoon style in the air. He's got bones that sort of jab out and become stabbing weapons. Mm-hmm. But he's also got a chainsaw.
He just has chainsaw arms and legs also.
He's got an electric guitar. He's got a friend. I know he's got a super – I don't know if it's the original game or one of the subsequent ones where he's got a little friend who can come out and become a basketball hoop. And he sort of grabs you and mashes you into a little ball and slam dunks you.
The name of that move is Hell Dunk. It's great. I can't remember if it was in the original, but it was definitely in Night Warriors. So
yeah,
it may have been in that one. But it's, again, they have to draw a unique basketball sprite for every character.
I'm guessing because this is 1994, they probably went with Raptor because Jurassic Park was still very much, you know, in the now.
Yes.
But yeah, Zabel Zarok.
And they didn't have a dinosaur character.
Zabel Zarok is a fantastic name. Double Z's. Yeah. Yeah.
That is pretty up there. It's pretty great.
Yes, I'm sorry. We skipped over Sasquatch. Who's
yes.
He's a Sasquatch.
he's a big old goofy Bigfoot.
Right.
He's got like a twisty leg. He's got ice beams. I think he's like supposed to be top tier in Vampire Savior for some reason, but he feels like the forgotten Darkstalker because he's not getting in Capcom versus SNK. He's one of those kind of characters, but I like him. He's very goofy.
No, he didn't make the cut. So interestingly, yeah, he is. He's literally a Bigfoot in that he's got giant feet and he's got a giant sort of foot attack. But he's actually not that big a character. He's more squat.
Yeah,
like, he's not nearly as tall as Anacharis or Victor. He's just sort of this big. I think the kids might say thick, and he's got exaggerated hands and feet. But he's not that tall. So
no, he's a little short guy. I like him.
But then his attacks sort of have a lot of range.
Yeah. And he's got one of my favorite anti-airs, which is like these pillars of ice that come out from the ground.
Yeah. He's got a lot of freezing attacks. I think at one point he sort of just eats you and spits you out and you're frozen.
Yeah, that's right.
Which if you're fast enough, you can land an extra hit before you unthaw.
Mm.
Also, I do like, so for all the unique animation in this game, the freeze animation is just across the board the same, but everyone looks like a giant frozen Coke bottle. I think that's sort of funny.
Yeah, I think like in some animations, it like spins around before it hits the ground. It's pretty great.
Yeah, there's a flourish on it, but they're basically like just the frozen stiff.
Yeah.
Sasquatch, Victor, Rico. Wolfman. We got Wolfman time. We got John Talbain, aka Gallon. And Ant. I think this is the resident UK of UK Brit of the game.
He is, yes. He represents England. I'm not sure how he represents England, but he does. his stage is like always London, and he has some. He can low profile fireballs because he's kind of hunched down when he's walking forward. Mm. So, and he's also obviously very very fast. He can dart around the screen with his dashing attacks, and he's another one that's really cool but hasn't shown up in many other games, which is kind of a shame. I think I like Talbain.
One thing I like about Talbain is that they sort of, as time goes on, I think they sort of lean into the martial arts aspect.
Yeah.
Because I think it's not in this game, but at least I think in part two, they give him sort of the nunchucks move.
That's right. Yes.
And what's interesting to me is that in this game, his default sort of attack, he can sort of fly forward as sort of like a charged like fireball. Mm. And the super like, sort of extra version lets you sort of cancel that and change direction.
Yes.
But in future games, that becomes the default version, and the super version lets you like cancel 3-4 times. Like,
yes,
so he becomes more fast and more agile as the series goes along.
That's right. Yeah, I think the maximum is like 4, which is like completely ridiculous. It's just, that's too many. But you got to try and keep up with where he is on screen.
Right. And since I mentioned it, that's right. Probably worth bringing up. So this is 1984. So again, Street Fighter II very much still in the zeitgeist. This is the same year that Super Turbo came out. So every fighting game sort of had this idea of, oh, well, the characters have to be from around the world, right? Mm. So in this game, and I think this game only, every character has a nation.
And yes.
They just ditched that. They ditched that with all future games.
Yeah, it's like Morrigan represents Scotland. Sasquatch is from Canada, apparently.
Right.
But no, I think they're basically, they use the same stages in the second game, but it's really not like a big thing at all.
Right. I believe, I should have written these down, but I think Dimitri's probably Romania, and Anacharis is Egypt, of course, Bishamon is Japan, Victor, I believe, is Germany, Felicia, I want to say, is America, because she's very, her first stage is definitely Las Vegas. Raptor, I want to say, is Australian?
That's right, yes.
He's got a Union Jack on his pants.
He has, yep.
And I don't remember where Fishman is from. Maybe South America, like Brazil?
Yeah, I think Brazil. And then Phobos Hutsil is Mexico. And then yes. Pyron is... when Pyron appears, a giant flaming crater lands on the... A giant flaming comet lands on the character select screen and just says, Hellstorm.
Right, yeah. He's the other. He's kind of like Akuma. Like, he's got his own personal
stage.
Yeah. But yes, let's talk about those special bosses, because in the original game, you know, again, Street Fighter 2 style, you've got your regular cast and you've got your bosses, and you cannot play as the bosses. They are only computers.
Nope, not at all.
So after you beat the rest of the cast, you get two more characters to select screen. We've got another one who I think of the Japanese name first, Huitzel or Phobos. I guess Phobos was probably copyrighted by someone, but yeah. And this is a very fun idea. It's a sort of an ancient robot. I believe the animation makes it clear that this is sort of like a part of a collection of robots that exist on our world, and they come to life every few thousand years to sort of destroy civilization and restore Earth somehow.
Yeah, and it's complicated. It's
right.
Something about evolution.
But he's one of those robots.
Yeah, he's one of those.
And if you look at his design, I think these days he's more recognizable because he's based on very ancient Japanese Jomon clay figurines.
Yes, that's right.
These days, I think it's become more common because if you look at Breath of the Wild, a lot of the shrines and designs in that game are based on Jomon artwork. So if you look at Huitzel Phobos today, you can sort of see the similarity. But even though he's an ancient robot, I do love that he's got big bombs, he's got laser beams. He's a very agile character. He can float a little bit. He transforms his body. He's a very, very exquisitely animated character. Lots of unique attack moves, even normal moves that just sort of contort his body and create extra limbs if needed. Just fantastic drawing.
Yeah, again, sort of Sentinel adjacent in a way, because his body is constantly changing to suit the needs of what he's doing.
It's, right. Not quite as oversized. He's more human size, but
he's a little squat, like a bit like Sasquatch. He's not going to tower over you, but he's got lasers and nobody else has.
But like Sentinel, he's part of a unit. Like you can see in the background of his stage, there's a giant robot, which I think is making other robots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And one of his cuter wind poses is little birds come and sort of perch on his sort of shoulders.
That animation genuinely looks like it was Disney style,
because he's a Disney princess.
Yeah, I knew it all along. No, the birds look like they're about to burst into a song. It's great.
So yeah, I forget the in-game logic for this, but I know later games give him like a child companion.
Like one of the versions of Savior 2, Vampire Savior, the lore is like this child finds the robot and he's protecting him. But all it amounts to is this kid just following him wherever he goes on screen, a bit like Anita in Donovan.
Right.
But it's a cute touch because they felt the need to explain why Huitzel is there at all. And so they didn't need to, but they did anyway. I appreciate that. That's good.
Last but not least, we got an alien. It's aliens. It's Pyron. And let me tell you, we've talked about animation, but now we really talk about animation,
because
Pyron is a shapeshifter made of living fire. His idle animation is like, imagine a body in the middle of fire and the fire sort of just flows up from his toes to his horns. And you only ever see part of his body at once. So it's kind of like he's always flowing, burning, changing.
Yes.
It sort of makes me dizzy. Makes me dizzy to think about him.
If you're going to make an intimidating final boss, this is kind of a good way to do it. An unknowable flame-based entity that just transforms into pinwheels and swirling masses of flame. He gave me a lot of problems when I was playing through this recently. I'll just put it like that.
Yeah, as final bosses go, he's hard to deal with. His fireballs are gigantic. If they hit the ground, they create pillars of flame that can burn you.
Yeah, that's the worst. I kept getting hit by those.
I'm pretty sure he can shoot them in, like, he can arc them, he can shoot them up, he can shoot them down.
Yep.
He's got a dive attack, he's got a spinning, it's almost like a spinning kick, but he sort of creates meteors around him and sort of zooms across the screen.
Yeah, he's kind of a problem.
He teleports.
Yes, he does, a lot. He does that a lot. They toned him down a lot when they made him playable, but the first version is like he's a big problem.
And that's the original cast. So you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 original plus 2 CPU only. So that's pretty good. For 94, with the amount of animation, it's pretty solid, I must say. A pretty solid debut as the series goes.
Yeah, especially since this is like the first one. And, you know, they've had to, obviously, they've got a basis in, you know, mythology for some of these characters, but they still had to design them. And if you look at the concept art, they went through a lot of different designs. They iterated on them quite a bit.
So as far as new things go, we mentioned a few things. We mentioned the air blocking. We've got guard cancels. This is the first game to have guard cancels in the Capcom chain.
Mm-hmm.
We've got what I call intentional chain combos, because in the original Street Fighter II, combos were kind of an accident. They sort of leaned into them when they realized how good they were. But in Darkstalkers, the combos are there by design, in that most characters you can link lights to mediums to heavies,
mm-hmm.
most of them. Not everybody works this way, but almost everyone has some sort of simple to execute combo in that regard,
which
makes it sort of easier to punish things, makes it easier to link into special moves. You know, these are things that sort of you've sort of learned by accident in Street Fighter 2, but here in Vampire Darkstalkers, you just sort of you start there. It's like, oh, let me try linking this, and in most characters it works pretty easily.
Yeah, the I think with the first iteration of this, the limit was that it had to be the same type. Like, you couldn't mix punches and kicks yet. They added that in. They added that in Night Warriors, but it's still, you know, much easier to get your head around. And that's something that they'd eventually bring into the Marvel Versus series. You know, just working your way between the different strengths of attack, and it works really nicely. It feels good to get a combo that way, I think.
One thing that's very unique to this game is the special meter. So special meters in general were pretty new to Capcom games. I mean, this is 94, so Super Turbo is the first Street Fighter to have a special meter.
Mm-hmm.
So in Darkstalker, your meter builds up as you attack. Once it gets full, it's automatically active, and indeed actively decreasing.
Mm-hmm.
And once your meter is full, whatever next special move you use becomes a new move.
Yes.
So if you're throwing fireballs, you're doing fireball, fireball, fireball. Your next fireball is going to be a big fireball.
Mm-hmm.
It's just automatic. You don't choose it. It just happens. Now, characters do have unique super moves, so you can strategize and use your super move when your meter is full, but you can't save it, and you can't sort of like surprise people with it. It's like, no, your meter is full. It's active. It's actively dwindling. You're going to use it now, or it's going to go away.
Yeah. I thought that was a really interesting system, especially since the main problem is you'll sometimes just use it by accident because you weren't quite ready for your meter to be full. So you waste it on like a fireball when you wanted to use a special. But it does kind of make you go on the offensive and just try and use it before it goes or before your opponent gets it. But there's also there's some very silly commands for the super moves. So, you know, good luck getting them out before the meter runs out.
Yeah, and again, to bring up Super Turbo again. So this is the same year as Akuma debuted, and of course he had his infamous, you know, low punch forward, high punch, high kick. Or did I skip one? But you know, it's just a bunch of buttons and commands. Yep. A lot of the special super moves in this game are just like that. I'm pretty sure Anacharis's, you know, Pharaoh judgment move is like medium punch, low punch, down, low kick. Like, it's a bunch of buttons and pushing down, and then you throw out that sort of magic beam.
Some of them feel like you're inputting some kind of magical incantation on the joystick.
It's like wild.
You're casting a spell.
If we can go cross company, you know, King of Fighters 94, also 94, and I'm pretty sure some of those supers have you charge up.
Yes, I'm pretty sure they do.
This is bonkers. Bonkers commands, you know. Some whatever people were drinking in Osaka back in 1994, they must have been really hammered, because these commands all these series would tone it down in the future.
But they definitely would. My wrists are thankful for it, quite frankly, some of those, because charging up, what madness, what decadence.
But one of the things I think is very important is that this sort of creates, at least I think it creates, the sort of the concept of EX moves, because since every special move, almost every special move, has a sort of extra special variant, in future games, and indeed other series in general, would sort of take this idea of, oh, you want fireballs? Okay, here's a big fireball that you can use by spending meter. And this, it just sort of becomes, it's the default in this game, and future games would sort of introduce this as, oh, here's an optional big fireball. Here's an optional dragon punch that does more hits. Whereas in this game, it becomes automatic. Yeah. And I think that sort of influences future games, like, oh, well, we could just make EX moves, of which is sort of like, you know, extra versions of special moves.
Yeah, I think one of the other early games to have it is, of all things, Street Fighter the movie, the arcade version. That has EX moves. I think they work a little differently. Like, as long as you've got meter, you can use them as much as you want. But they would eventually sort of settle them into what we know today as EX moves. But it's Darkstalkers kind of, to me, sort of starts off this trend of Capcom experimenting between Super Turbo and Alpha. So they're throwing as many ideas as they can just to see what kind of sticks. And some of it does, some of it doesn't. But I think, you know, these are baby steps. They're just coming off Super Turbo. I mean, what are they going to do?
They're going to do Alpha is what they're going to do, because that comes out the next year.
that is right, yes.
in a very short amount of time, as we learned in our Alpha episode recently. So that game was rushed.
Yeah, because like between Super Turbo and Alpha, Capcom released five fighting games. That's nuts. That's like all in the space.
Their output during this time is just incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Absolutely. Yes.
Speaking of experimental, I wanted to mention one of the unique features of Darkstalkers is that the fireballs, like the projectiles, all operate on sort of a priority.
Yeah.
Invisible priority meter. Like in Street Fighter 2, if Ryu and Ken threw a fireball and they touch, the fireballs just dissipate. Whereas in this game, there's like a momentum thing going on. If Dimitri throws a fireball and Morgan throws her sort of spirit bat, when his fireball comes close, hers will sort of push his back a little bit. But if it's a super version, it will overwrite hers. Like, it's very complicated, and every move has sort of this unique sort of momentum thing going on.
Yeah, it depends on like the strength of the projectile and what projectile it is, I think. So it's definitely different from how other fighting games are doing it, and that's something that continued throughout the series. So they didn't ditch it; they kept with it.
But also, just the fireballs in general would sort of transform as the series go along. Like, I know in this first game, Morgan's sort of spirit bat thing is just a regular; it goes the length of the screen fireball.
Yeah.
Whereas in future games, I believe it has very limited range, or at least the lower punch one does. Or am I thinking of Lilith?
Yeah, Lilith. Lilith has like a really silly fireball that can be. You can basically plant it as a trap because it barely travels the screen, but it sticks around. But I think some of Morgan's later fireballs do like don't reach the full length of the screen. No, that's right. So, but obviously the EX one does.
I think Sasquatch has sort of the big ice beam in this game, but I think he has sort of the snowman thing, which is like limited range fireball.
That's right.
Snowball. It's a snowman. Mm. Time for a sequel, and it's time for a new name.
Yes, ditch the old one.
Right. We have a quote from Juichi Ono again. It doesn't feel like a sequel to us, but we're like a standalone new game. We reprogrammed so many things from scratch, like the timing windows for each attack.
Wow.
But it comes out the next year. It's only one year later.
I don't know.
So again, we got regional confusion here, but so in America, it's called. Or in say worldwide, Night Warriors, Darkstalkers Revenge. In Japan, it's Vampire Hunter, Darkstalkers Revenge. Either way, 95 arcade, 96 on the Saturn. And what have we got this new? So, well, they've reformatted the whole supermove thing. So now it's more in line with what we think of today, in that you build up meter, you have a stock of meters. I think you've got a max of 9, and you use it when you want to use it.
Yes, you're no longer at the mercy of a constantly draining meter, which is nice.
I think I skipped the quote. We actually had a quote for the original version. It was very deliberate. We had Ono again. We wanted the fights to be more varied and exciting. This way you can't just wait around forever while your gauge is full. But you can. Now you can build it up and save your specials for when you want them. Really confusing because of the way we call moves now. So in part two here, the super moves, quote unquote, the ones that are like unique supers, they're called enhanced specials or ES moves. Whereas the enhanced versions of special moves are called EX moves or backwards. I got it backwards.
It's enhanced specials, which we call EX moves nowadays. Yes. And EX for the big super moves. I don't blame you for being confused. That's always confused me as well.
I got it backwards.
Easily done. But no, this one also adds pursuit attacks, which is rare in 2D fighting games. You don't see that as often as in 3D, at least. I always felt that.
Right. You can, when you knock someone down, you can jump on them and hit them on the ground.
Yes.
I think most, if not all, characters have a sort of ES version of the ground attack.
Yeah.
Although my favorite is that Anacharis has a unique super move that dodges the ground attack and sucks you into a vortex, and then you fall down like portal style and hit the ground and take a lot of damage.
Of course, Anacharis has a move like that.
Yeah. Funamizu says the real nuts and bolts of the development work took about 5 months. In the world of video game production, that's really not a lot of time. You don't say, Funamizu, no, also working on Street Fighter Alpha at the same time.
Wow, that is not long at all.
Yeah. So as he notes, we used a lot of the old backgrounds with minor adjustments. So yeah, you don't get a lot of unique, quote unquote, content this time around, but they clearly made a lot of changes, a lot of refreshments.
Mm-hmm.
They add a lot of new colors. One of the things I like is that, yeah, every character has a dark color. They call them Goki colors, is in Akuma's name in Japan, mm-hmm. Goki Akuma. And they had an idea of, oh, what if when you choose a character with dark colors, they've got unique abilities and a unique attacks, but...
Oh, no.
Again.
Uno,
5 months. Regretfully, it would have required us to redo every character, so we abandoned that idea.
It's because Samurai Shodown did try that with Samurai Shodown 3. There's like a different, I think it's Bust and Slash in there.
Yeah, you got different colors and different poses. Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is a lot of work. But as I said, I started working my way backwards, but you can definitely see that Night Warriors is a big kind of upheaval from the first game. It's a lot of its ideas sort of gel together a bit nicer, and it did add one of my favorite characters, so maybe we should get on and mention them.
Yes. So in Night Warriors, first of all, the computer-only bosses are now playable, so
yes.
you get to enjoy Robot Time, you get to enjoy Pyron Time, but there are two brand new unique characters for this game, and as the name suggests, the two new characters are sort of posed as opposition to the established characters. These are characters that are, I guess, they're vampire hunters or like they're fighting against the monsters, even though one of them is kind of they're both sort of monster-ish.
Yeah. they're monster adjacent. Mm. they're right next to him.
So we've got Donovan and his little companion, Anita. And Donovan, I believe, in canon is sort of half monster or like the spawn of monsters.
I think sometimes he's described as a dampier, kind of a half vampire, but it's unclear what kind of monster he actually is, but he's half Darkstalker, basically.
Right. So he's got some evil powers, but he's basically a human being who's got a big ass sentient sword that laughs sometimes. It's a really cool looking sword, I must say.
And he can surf on it.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen another sword like this in games before or since. It's sort of like, it's got like a curved blade, but it's almost like it curves to like a spiral point. And
yeah.
It's got like
it's got a little mouth.
Right. It's got a chunk cut out of it, and he can throw it. It can come back. It can slash up. It's got like lightning and fire attacks. there's a foot, right? Does it summon a foot at one point?
Yeah. yeah, he can do the big steppy. It just, his giant foot just stomps on you. But he's, I think he can plant it in the ground for stuff as well. So he's kind of a stance character, which is, I've never been very good at playing as him. But he also has like these spirits that appear behind him. So he's basically a JoJo's.
Yeah,
he's very clearly a JoJo's.
I think he is. I think he's very much, you know, this is definitely, this is 95. So, you know, stands and JoJo are very much in vogue in the manga. And we know everybody in Capcom is reading JoJo at this point. We know they are.
Yes.
And this is 95. Yeah, okay, this is a few years before they actually made a JoJo game officially. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's definitely, you know, JoJo's in the zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And I think as future games would reflect, Donovan would not stick around that long. I don't think he would become very popular, but the other brand new character would become an instant fan favorite and be in everything from future games since, and lots of other non-Doctor games. We've got Cienko, I think I pronounced this right, H-S-I-N-K-O, Cienko, although in Japanese she's just called Lele, which I think is a much simpler name. Because, and also Leide is like the kanji for like spirit or ghost. So like literally she's like ghost, spirit.
Yes.
And she's a Jiangshi, a hopping corpse, which is a character you see in a lot of old video games, a sort of jumping humanoid with outstretched arms and a little hat on. I mean, I think the first one I remember seeing was in Super Mario Land.
I was about to say that's the first one I saw as well.
Those creatures that sort of jump at you, and you can jump on them, but they get back up unless you jump on them and knock them into a pit.
Yep.
That's her. But of course, because it's Darkstalkers, she didn't just hop around. She's got a twitchy arm and twitchy head, and she's got giant sleeves with big claws in them, and she throws things from out of under her claws. She's got an air dash where she disappears and just becomes little footsteps. Like, oh my God.
I think that was like an early example of an air dash as well in fighting games. She was one of the trailblazers.
Oh, and her sister.
Yes.
I can't mention. Yeah. Her sister Lin Lin is the sort of, I don't know the official name for it, the sort of little paper on her face, the little curse paper on her face.
Mm.
And Funimizu says in the beginning, they were twin sisters who fought together, but eventually Lin Lin became a support character as far as the cloth in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But she appears in some wind poses and I think maybe even a super. Huge star. Welcome to the fold.
I like Shenko. She's really fun. And she's another one who can get dizzies she's got like a move where she throws items that she drags from her sleeves, and some are heavier than others, and they incur a dizzy state. So you can get a free hit. But it's funny that it's only the heavy ones that do that.
Right, and you can't control it. It is random. No.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure is you know, probably hell for tournament people, but for, you know, for filthy casuals like ourselves, I feel like it's just fun.
No, she's one of my favorite designs. She's a lot of fun, and it feels like they had a lot of fun sort of designing her as well. She's cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, she's a new female character for the lineup, so of course her gown is exposed, you know, exposes her cleavage.
Yeah, that is true.
But unlike the other two, she's not quite as bouncy, let's say.
No, like, no.
She's got bounce in her outfit, not her anatomy.
Yes, yes.
Those big sleeves, those big honking sleeves.
Yes, with like a million weapons inside, it's great.
So yeah, because both Darkstalkers and the sequel come out on home consoles in 96, I remember skipping the PlayStation version of the original game and just getting the Saturn version of this game. So I remember playing a lot of this one at home.
I seem to remember the PS1 version of Darkstalkers 1 was so delayed that the Saturn version of Night Warriors came out before it.
Very possibly.
Yes, that's... pretty unfortunate, but I've never actually played that PS1 version. But no, the Night Warriors port is supposed to be pretty good. So on Saturn, and yeah, I can totally understand skipping the first one.
Yeah, and if memory serves me, I think this is also one of those Saturn games where it's like by default some of the animations are locked, but if you open up a secret menu, you can unlock more animations. I don't know why they did those things, but like go for it. It's in a secret menu.
Yeah, I think it's something like if you have a mirror match, you can set the option so that it has more frames of animation. Because this is like just before the 4 megabit cartridge, I think, or the one megabit.
As I recall, this was released like as is in the U.S., so I didn't have to import this one or anything.
Yeah,
and no. I don't think any of the U.S. Saturn games even had the option to get the plug-in cart. So this is strictly a disc game. Mm-hmm. So some things are trimmed, but as I recall, it looked very good. They made some cuts. Obviously, you got to deal with loading times, but I think for its era and considering how much you get, I believe this was a pretty good port, as all things considered. Now, I think I would call this a main event, right? Because I feel like with part three, I feel like everything really clicks in this series, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And even though, unfortunately, not everyone is here because memory limitations mean they had to cut some characters, we get new characters. And I feel like if you're only going to play one version, you probably want to go with this version. Vampire Savior, which I believe is the name across all regions, I think.
That's right.
Although the PlayStation 1 version, as you mentioned, was called Dark Circus 3.
Yes.
But that was only on home. The arcade version was always Vampire Savior.
That's right, yeah. There's like hidden in the data, there's a Darkstalkers Jeddah's Damnation title screen, but they just never bothered using it. So it's just Vampire Savior.
Yeah, I think also other subtitles are Lord of Vampire.
Yes.
Did I imagine Jeddah's Lament? Or maybe I'm imagining that.
Well, technically there was another one, World of Darkness, because White Wolf, the people who published Vampire, like a RPG book?
Yeah, that's the one.
Apparently Capcom made a deal with them, and they sent a Vampire Savior cabinet to their offices. So there's like flyers and marquees that say World of Darkness to tie it in with the vampire stuff. I don't fully understand it, but it's... That is there.
That's very forward thinking. Mm-hmm. Collaboration.
Yeah.
So a lot has changed for this brand new game. Most significantly is the fact that they've sort of revamped the way fights work.
Yes.
There's no longer rounds, really. So basically each character has two bats. There are two bats inside of you. And as you fight, you know, your life goes down. Oh, we should mention, This introduces white damage. Like, as you take damage, there's white damage and there's red damage, and your white damage will heal if you don't take another hit.
Yes.
So you kind of, like, you auto-regenerate some health as you're fighting, unless you just get your ass beat, in which case it's all gone.
Yes, that's right.
But when it's out, when you get KO'd, you lose one bat. And the winner does not get anything back. White damage maybe comes back, but they do not get a full refill. So the fights sort of go much faster. I think there's only one timer too. I think there's only one long timer.
Yeah, there's just one timer. It's more kind of Killer Instinct style. So
yes, Killer Instinct had a similar thing.
It's more like one long round rather than multiple rounds. And the fact that you can recover health encourages you to just go as aggressive, just always be attacking, or try and run away if you can. It makes it really exciting, though. The other thing is, like, the game is way faster as well. Like, it goes, it's probably as fast as Capcom fighters get outside of Marvel, and it just goes like the clappers. It's great.
I didn't write it down, but I think, does it give you a turbo option? I think it gives you an option, right?
There is a turbo option, yes. Yeah.
I'm the weirdo who never chooses turbo, but I remember, you know, when playing in the arcades, whoever I play always chooses turbo, and I'm like, okay,
I'm one of those people. I think it's easier to keep up with the Marvel. Watching high-level Marvel 2 play gives me a headache. that is too much for me to process. That's going too fast. Yeah,
that's turbo speed with three characters on the screen.
Yeah.
This at least is still 2-1-2.
Yeah.
So, as part of the revamp, so they've made all new stages. They only made a limited amount, though. So we've lost the idea of unique characters or unique stages, with one major exception. We'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. So instead, as you play the game, you just sort of go through a round robin of stages, and you fight whoever you fight there.
Yeah.
And all the stages are just weird. They're just some weird stuff. I think they're wonderful weird, you know? I think...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What's the there's one where you're fighting on the side of a building, not the roof, like the side.
Yeah, and you can see like the street, people moving by on cars at the like at the very bottom.
Right.
Yes.
There's a weird train. It's just a weird train with a mouth on it.
Yes. That stage is called Iron Horse Iron Terror.
Thank you for remembering the name. I love that name. Thank you.
They all have excellent stage names.
Right. And that's right. You get to see the name of the stage before you choose it, which is wonderful. Actually, you don't choose it, but when it comes up, it tells you where you're fighting.
Yeah.
And also new stuff, the new Dark Force system. Every character has a unique sort of ability, although some of them are not that unique. Like, I sort of compare it to sort of like the gems in Marvel Superheroes. Like, you sort of activate ability and every character does something. Like, maybe it's super armor, maybe you get a helper, maybe you deal extra damage. The only unique one, in my opinion, is Anakara's, because Anakara splits in two, and you basically get to fight as a top half and a bottom half.
Yeah.
Which, I must say, they retain that, I believe, for Marvel Capcom 2, because he's in Marvel Capcom 2, and I think he gets to keep that move.
He does, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like, BB Hood gets, you press a button and she does a projectile, so you don't have to charge it, and Morrigan gets like a mirror image. Some of them are definitely shared, but it's, I really like that system. It helps kind of make each character feel even more unique, but, you know, gives them, you know, something that the other characters may not necessarily have, and I think it works really well.
So for the roster, unfortunately, they had to make a few cuts.
Yes, they did.
We lost Donovan. Like I said, Donovan, he was never popular. I'm sorry.
No,
I know he's got his fans, but clearly the fact that he didn't make the cut for this game, I think says like, no, he's not, no one likes him. Also, unfortunately, the two boss characters don't make the cut. We have a specific quote from Funimizu who said, "Removing Phobos opened up a ton of memory for other uses. All I can say is I'm sorry."
Oh,
because let's face it. Those two characters in particular just have a ton of animation. So I think they cut them. Like, okay. By losing these two characters, we need to add four new people. So we lose three, get four. And one of the ones we lost, it's all right.
Yeah. Like at that point, I think they mentioned it in like interviews. Like the CPS2 was basically, they were reaching the limits of what they could put on there. And especially with a game like Darkstalkers, where they've got four times the amount of animation frames as like Street Fighter, that they're going to run out of space. That's probably why they ditched character specific stages as well, which is unfortunate, but sometimes you just have to throw the robot out.
Yeah. But again, nothing went unused. Again, we have Funimizu quote saying that they went from 32 megabytes to 64 megabytes just for sound effects.
Yes.
And we haven't really touched on it so far, but the sounds and music in Darkstalkers sounds completely different than anything else at that time. We really should hammer home this. I think this was the first game I remember seeing the Q sound sort of intro for.
That's right, yeah.
And the main composer, we have his name here, Takayuki Iwai. He was the main sound composer for the series. He didn't stick with the series alone. He did X-Men, he did Marvel Superheroes. He did Alpha 3, and Alpha 3 also has a sound that's unlike anything else.
Yes, that is very true.
Alpha 3 threw out all the music from Alpha 1 and 2, and like, okay, everyone's got incredible jams now.
Yes.
Everyone's got jams. Even Ryu's got jams.
Ryu with jams at last.
So let's talk about the new faces. Some of them are easy to sum up and some of them are kind of weird. Mm-hmm. So I think we mentioned already. Let's talk about Little Red Riding Hood, a.k.a. Baby Bonnie Hood, a.k.a. in Japan, I think this is a better name, Beletta.
Yes.
Beletta. I mean,
Beletta.
She's Little Red Riding Hood with guns. That's it.
Yes.
You got it.
Okay, so my favorite thing about her is some of her normal attacks make it look like she's not actually meaning to hurt you. Like she sneezes and her arm jabs out, or she sees a mole on the ground, so she sticks a knee out. She's trying to play innocent, and then sometimes the mask just comes off and she's garroting your throat with a knife.
Exactly. She sings to herself. She literally goes, la, 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 la. She skips.
If you crouch for long enough, a little flower appears and she marvels at it. Like,
but don't be fooled. In canon, her profession is monster. She hunts these monsters. She's like,
that's
she's
right.
basically replacing Donovan, which is like, I'm sorry, that's a trade up. That is a trade up.
Yep, that is a trade up. Absolutely, yes.
She's got guns. She's got bombs. She's got knives. This game taught me the Japanese word abayo, which is kind of like a really gruff way to say, like, you know, goodbye or so long. You know, it's kind of like you're out of here.
Yeah.
Because it's a throw. She grabs you and basically slits your throat with
yep.
not quite gross. It's not quite so gross, but like she basically slits your throat and says, abayo, and like you're out, which is also, it's very masculine. It's like, you know, Japanese language is very gendered.
Hmm.
And, you know, she obviously presents as a very young, you know, innocent girl. But during some of her moves, she talks suddenly in a very gruff, masculine voice, which again, so funny.
Yeah. Oh, one of the best. So good.
Funamizu credits her design to Akiman, you know, just well-known regular Japanese artist on the Capcom side who did a lot of characters this time. And he acknowledges that when she was created, there were some grumblings around the office, like, are we just pandering the otaku by making a Lolita character? But I really think
she's very different from that kind of thing, I would say.
She's, yeah, exactly. She's, you know, she's like a secret monster, you know? She's got... She's got the dark side to her. She's got, oh my God, I forget what it's called, but one of her supers is she remembers her grandma.
Yeah.
Her, I guess her dead grandma. Great. And then she starts crying and she stabs you and she grabs you and she throws you into the puddle of her tears, which is surprisingly deep. And like,
she's also got one where she offers up an apple that's, of course, a bomb that explodes.
She's got like a Molotov cocktail flamethrower.
Yeah, it's like, her amazing picnic basket has got missiles in it.
Yeah, when they had to translate her for Marvel Capcom 2, I'm sure they had to make almost no changes because all her moves are, you know, projectiles, bombs, explosives.
Yeah, yeah.
They have great range. She's an amazing character. Lovely. Mm.
Yes. Yes.
Not Marvel Capcom 2, but certainly has her fans. QB, it's a Queen Bee lady.
It's a bee lady, yes.
So they said ever since the first game, they've wanted to have an insect-related character. Funamizu again credits Akiman for her concept. And yeah, Boletta is obviously, she's a little girl, so she's not really sexy unless you're very deranged. I think QB is also not so sexy, which I think is she's, I mean, she's basically a bug lady.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the purpose. It's she's meant to be a little off-putting kind of.
Right. Just, she's got like she's got like a weird bug body to her. She has arms and legs, but she's got kind of exaggerated proportions. She's got like the big bug eyes, but she also has, I think we got to mention this. It's not a super move. It's just, I think it's like a special throw where she, I swear, this is someone's fetish, okay?
Oh, this one's gross.
Yeah. She stings you and impregnates you, and then she dies.
Yes, and she bursts out the egg that she makes out of you.
Yeah. So it doesn't do that horrifying. Much damage. It doesn't do that much damage, but it takes like 5 or 6 seconds to fully execute.
Yeah,
it's, and everyone has a unique sort of egg version.
Yes, they do. It does more damage to your opponent in real life. It's morale sapping is what it is.
It's just gross.
And she's also got one that is a super move. She gets an army of bees to sting your character, and they have yet another unique sprite for being stung by bees.
this is 97, so this is pre Nicolas Cage Wicker Man, isn't it?
Yes it is. QB scares me, and I'm not sure if I like it.
She's someone's favorite.
Yeah, oh absolutely.
So also, actually, now that I look at it, 3 of the 4 new faces are ladies, so good on Capcom.
True. Yes, yeah.
We got Lilith. Lilith is unique. So Lilith is kind of a new Morrigan. Like, I think in canon she's a clone of Morrigan.
Can I put my canon nerd glasses on for a second?
Go ahead. Yeah, there's backstory.
When Morrigan was born, part of her power was sealed away, and over 300 years, it gained a form and a temporary body, and that's Lilith.
Right.
Yes.
So here she is. I think you and I we have opinions on gender. I think you and I, but Lilith has opinions on gender because apparently the concept began as a gender neutral clone.
Yes.
We got a quote here. Why don't you go ahead and talk about this quote we have from the complete
work? Oh, yeah, sure, sure. So this is from Haruo Murata. They worked on story and concept for Darkstalkers. This one comes from an interview they did in the art book. So we were exploring the concept of a girlish boy back in 1997. So I guess you could say we were ahead of the times. In the end, we took a somewhat vague approach where Lilith is physically female because she's a copy of Morrigan, but her general appearance does not emphasize one gender over the other.
Right. So I think, so she's got like a boyish haircut and she's flat chested, but yes. I think through modern eyes, I look at her as Lolita Morrigan. I don't know. And certainly they definitely, you know, Baby Bonnie Hood and QB are not so sexy. I think Lilith is very sexually presented because she's got a move where she becomes naked with a bunch of bats, you know,
like that is correct. Yes.
And I think she's naked in the intro too, like the attract mode.
Yes, as is Morrigan.
Right, like Morrigan appears and then Lilith appears next to her. Yeah, and I think they're both naked. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So they know. They know. Gender neutral, whatever. They know she's hot.
Mm-hmm.
We only know she's of age.
We can't talk about Lilith without talking about the greatest super move in fighting game history.
You mentioned at the top of the show, please tell us about the Gloomy Puppet Show.
Gloomy Puppet Show costs 2 bars of meter, and Lilith throws a top hat at her opponent. If it hits, she dresses into a bunny costume and says it's showtime, and then you play like a 5-second rhythm mini game. Like, you use all 6 buttons to like a little beat will pop up, and you have to press them in time. The more beats you hit, the more damage it does. It is so ridiculous. It's great. You'll never hit with it because it's like telegraphed from a mile away. But yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah, it's hard to hit with. It uses a ton of meter, and you have to work really hard to get maximum damage from it. Which I don't think even in the end, I don't think it does that much damage.
No, it doesn't. But if you can do it, it's an incredible pop off. It's right. just styling on your opponent. Just
absolutely,
it's great.
Speaking of new supers, I think we have to mention Dimitri's new Midnight Bliss attack.
Yes, we do.
Or as I call it, the ultimate no homo, because it's a very short range, sort of like, almost like a short range Akuma, like Shungokusatsu. Like, he sort of slides forward.
Yeah.
But if he grabs you, he says, come on, baby, and transforms the character into a sexy woman.
Yes.
If it's a woman already, she becomes extra woman-y, extra femme, high femme.
Yes. And then he drains their blood because, you know, he's a vampire. It's what he does.
Yes. And again, every character has a unique sprite.
Yes. They had to do it for the entire cast, even the ones that they cut because they put them back in the console versions.
Yeah, they come back.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite Midnight Bliss? Any favorite Midnight Bliss sprites?
Let me think. I think QB turns into like a nurse with like a syringe, which makes sense because, you know, she's a bee. Lord Raptor turns into like a goth punk girl kind of thing. They're all pretty good, but those two in particular stand out to me.
I remember Anacharis looks particularly good. It's like like a mummy lady, like the kind of like almost like a hieroglyphics drawing, like really, very shapely, but also just sort of like still otherworldly, you know, like cool, very cool.
Oh, wait, there's also Felicia. Her tail like makes the shape of a heart, which is very cute.
All right, we've saved the best for last. It's time to talk about the new last boss, who has his own stage, Jetta. His name's in the title.
Yes.
I'm gonna say it, pardon my French, Jetta fucking rules. Okay, Jetta rules. We have a quote saying from Okada saying, oh, he's for maniacs. He is a maniac.
Yes. Who was the voice actor? Hold on, let me just he has this incredibly manic laugh by Ishin Chiba. There we go.
Oh yeah, that guy gets a lot of work. Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's got a laugh that echoes through your head. And I think his design is pretty great. He's a demon, but he's in a business suit, which makes total sense.
Yeah, and officially he's like the lord of vampire. He's the lord of this world, and he's sort of always hovering. He's got these sort of weird sort of bat-like wings. His idle animation, off the charts. He basically just bleeds from like his body. Like, he sort of leaks out some blood periodically as he hovers there. He can chop off his own head. he can grab you and inflate you and sort of make you burst into like a blood bubble.
Yep.
Which I think, again, everyone has a unique animation there.
They do.
It's like
yes.
a sprite effect or something. It's like some sort of warping effect.
Mm-hmm.
His unique stage, let's talk about it. His unique stage is the fetus of God, where you fight in front of a giant monster baby in the womb.
Yes.
Oh, my Lord. And the music, oh, my God. The music for this stage is just the absolute, it's a jam and a half. It's so good. It's so good.
That music goes in incredibly hard for a stage set in front of a giant fetus.
And his supers, I think, I'm pretty sure this Jedha taught me the Japanese word for contract. Which is Keiaku, because he's got a super move where he throws a sort of like a slosh on the ground, and you have to time it. You have to hold the button and time it, and let go of the button when you want the slosh to attack, because it grabs. And if it grabs you, it pulls you into the ground, sloshes you back and forth in like blood or whatever, and then a giant contract appears and it slaps your body onto the contract.
Yeah,
and he laughs and he says, "Keiakundryo." Which means like contract complete, and I love it. I love it.
That's so good. Yeah, and everyone has a different. I don't think they're unique sprites, but they do have a different signature when they're slapped against the contract. It's great.
Yeah, so high good. Damage. High. He's very fast. Yeah. He moves. He's got the. He's basically got a scythe. He can basically summon a scythe from time to time, and he can throw it. It spins around. He's just. All around, I love Jedha. I love Jedha.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see why. But like a lot of his attacks, like have him separating his body parts from him. It's great design all around, and I think he makes a better boss than Pyron personally because I think he's just better.
Yeah, I mean, I was starting to see Pyron go, but again, I think it's an upgrade. I think it's an upgrade.
Yeah, that's a trade up.
And I think history reflects this because as far as characters who appear in other games, Jedha appeared in a lot more games from that point on, including some outright, you know, dogs, but whatever. He got to show up again. So we should mention these were Japan only, but after Vampire Saver came out, I guess because they didn't want to just leave it with that roster.
Yeah.
They ended up making two arcade only, Japan only revisions. And the names are really confusing. And I swear to God, I never get clear which one came first, which one came second. There's Vampire Hunter 2 and Vampire Savior 2.
Yes.
But really, realistically, they're both just like Super Vampire Savior. Like, they're basically just revisions on the game because all they do is they mix up the roster. They bring back Donovan and Huitzel and Phobos, but Hunter 2 takes out all the new faces from Vampire Savior. So it's basically like, here's an enhanced version of Night Warriors, if you want it.
Yeah.
Whereas Vampire Savior 2 brings back Donovan and the bosses, but takes out what I can only imagine were mathematically the unpopular characters.
Yeah.
Calbane, Rikuo, and Sasquatch all get cut.
Poor Sasquatch.
So no arcade game has all the characters in it. That doesn't exist.
No.
Home versions, yes. Arcades, no.
It's very confusing. They also made some, like, engine changes, but you'd have to kind of be, like, really into those games to sort of figure it out. There's like throw loops and stuff, and they changed how chains work. But it's certainly an interesting strategy for getting those missing characters in. Let's put it like that.
I mean, let's face it; it's 1997, so like, you know, if this was a modern game, of course they would just, you know, they'd make you pay for them and put them on as DLC. But at this point, the only way, you know, the only way to DLC is to make a new goddamn arcade board and send it out. So
yeah,
that's what they did. And it was all only in Japan. So we never saw them here. But of course, thanks to, you know, the modern release we mentioned at the time, the Capcom Fighting Collection, the Fighting Collection includes all five versions. So if you want to play these games, pick up that collection. You can get your pick of all of them. They're all there.
Yes. All the Darkstalkers are there.
And I'm assuming that they're untranslated or.
Those two are. They're, right. There's like some basic text only endings, so there's not, but like the win quotes will be in Japanese, but it's you've got the English version of Vampire Savior. So the only thing I wish they'd added for the collection was notes on what those two versions actually change, because there's they're just kind of there and you have to figure it out yourself. But that's a lot of retro collections don't have enough instructions for me, so that's probably a me thing.
Well, I guess in that case, I'm sure if you go online, the fans out there, I'm sure have framed it.
they've absolutely done the work.
Yes. And unfortunately, that's kind of the end of the series.
Yeah.
Or is it? No, it is. Honestly, it's the end, quote unquote, of the series, although we do get console ports and we get console revisions and we get console enhancements. We'll talk about them. Honestly, that's it. Like 1987, those arcade releases are kind of the end as far as making new quote unquote Darkstalkers. We actually have a quote from Funimizu in 1998, so after everything's out and done, regarding a sequel. "I'd like to return to the original concept for Darkstalkers if we made another game. Well, to be honest, I don't want to make another one."
Oh no.
He laughs. He quote, like, I'm not laughing, yeah. He's laughing.
Good.
"The reason is we'd have to keep adding characters, right? And if you have more than 15 characters, the game becomes a nightmare to balance. And there will end up being characters that we as developers don't even want to make. What the hell? No one even plays this guy anymore." He laughs again. So I think they just ran out of patience with this series.
Yeah.
They worked too hard. If they flew too close to the sun and burned their wings.
yeah, that sounds about right. Although I can completely understand 15 characters being a nightmare to balance. And then you look at something like Marvel versus Capcom 2. It's like, oh no.
Yeah, because guess what? They didn't balance it. They gave up. Like, nope.
They sure didn't.
Yeah. Here's Kobun. Here's a Servbot. It's a tiny little sprite that no one can hit.
And here's Magneto. We have a god tier and we also have a role tier right at the bottom.
All right. So let's move on to the console ports, because there's things to say about them. They're really interesting. Yeah. They're not new, quote unquote, new games, but they definitely have a lot to say. I'd like to lead off with the one that I bought and one that I played the most of, because it was kind of like the first unique, and I think for me it was like the best home port at the time. Officially called, this is complicated because it was the early days of the internet, Vampire Chronicle for Matching Service.
Yes.
A Japanese only Dreamcast release. I want to say 2000, maybe 2001. I imported it. I got it from my Dreamcast.
Oh, nice.
It includes all the characters. But more than that, it lets you play as different versions against each other. So, like, when you pick your character, you pick the version of the game the character comes from. And here's what gets weird. You get to pick versions that didn't even exist.
Yes, that's right. So
it's like, if you wanted to play Jedha Darkstalker style, where he didn't even exist, you can play, they made a new version of him that has different moves. Yeah. I don't know how they did this, but they clearly went above and beyond to make this sort of a, because I think another one that does this was the Street Fighter II Anniversary Collection, I want to say, in the early 2000s on PS2.
Where
you pick which version of Street Fighter you want. Like, it's all the characters are there, but you get to pick which version of the character you play as.
Yeah, yeah. I think they did like one of those on PS1, and they also did Hyper Street Fighter, the Anniversary Edition, which had everyone.
Which I believe is in this Capcom collection.
Yes,
I think
it is, because
that's the only Street Fighter in there. You get to pick your Street Fighter.
Yes, they couldn't get away with having a fighting collection without Street Fighter. So
right, but at least they gave us a unique Street Fighter that's not in the Anniversary collection.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, Darkstalkers on Vampire Chronicle on Dreamcast lets you pick all these characters. Otherwise, it basically plays like Vampire Savior. Like you can't go back to the old modes, but you can sort of pick new styles of characters, which makes it pretty unique. And, you know, definitely, you know, if you enjoyed them in their case, like, oh, I wanted to play the characters. Well, here you are. Here's all the characters. Go nuts.
Yes. And the matching service bit was something that Capcom appended to games that had online.
Right.
Sadly, I think there's ways to play Dreamcast stuff online, but I don't think these Capcom games are, because they did stuff like this for Alpha 3 and I think Tecromancer. They had an online version of Tecromancer.
The Dreamcast had a built-in modem. You know, it was the wave of the future. We just didn't know.
Yeah, we didn't know it.
And Vampire Chronicle eventually got a port to the PSP.
Yes. Yes, it did.
And this one did come out in America. So you can actually buy this. I think the shop's still online as of this recording. You can buy this on Vita if you want. Mm-hmm. You got Vampire Chronicle Chaos Tower, which has this sort of pick your character mode, but it also has sort of chaos because, again, it's on handheld. So you're probably going to play this by yourself unless you got a friend nearby.
Yeah.
It has the new Chaos Tower mode that lets you pick a team of characters and you basically fight your way against computer opponents through a tower. And each stage has sort of unique qualifications. And depending mm-hmm. on how you win the match, you go to a different part of the tower. It's actually very interesting.
It is.
And it's sort of a robust single player mode because as you work your way through the tower, you unlock bonus content on the game, you know, like, you know, art gallery and videos and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So as far as handheld versions of the game go, like, it's certainly, you know, obviously you're playing on a handheld, so no fight sticks, but it's a pretty interesting take on the game. And I think if you love this series, I would recommend it because it lets you experiment with it and lets you sort of, you know, just play with it at length.
That was like one of the first PSP games I ever got, and I played the hell out of it, but I could never clear the tower mode. It gets very difficult. So maybe if I had a fight stick, it'd be a little easier, but no, it's a, that was like a launch title for the PSP as well. It was like, or like very close to launch.
I want to say it's 2000, maybe 2005 or 2006. So very early in the PSP life and certainly well removed from the original Dreamcast game. So I don't know how they came up with that idea of, hey, what about this Dreamcast game? Let's put it on PSP. But they did it.
Yeah, it's probably the same thing that led to Power Stone Collection on the PSP.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of Capcom fighting games got a really good PSP version.
Yeah,
I know the Alpha 3 on PSP is amazing. It's got everything.
Yeah, it's really good.
What's that even called? The upper? Double upper hype?
Max. I think it's Max. Max,
exactly.
You joke, but those were legitimate versions of Street Fighter Alpha 3. Yeah,
no, they had all the characters, absolutely.
Yeah.
And one more we should mention of its era, a PS2 Japanese-only collection. I think, did you add this in the notes?
Yeah, I added this. I've got a copy of this.
Okay.
It's basically the five arcade Darkstalkers games. It's only got the Japanese versions of them. But did you ever play Street Fighter Alpha Anthology on PS2?
I didn't play that one, no. I played all the Alpha games, but I didn't play that collection.
Ah, right. Because it's kind of similar to that in that it's got a range of versions of the three different versions of Savior, which add in the characters that were missing. So, okay. Like, Savior 2 adds in the characters that they cut out and stuff. And they add a new character, D, which is a head-swapped version of Dimitri with Donovan's head. He was like, I think he was like supposed to be a cut character from Savior, but they were like, there's no way we can fit him in. Cause like Donovan's story is like, he becomes a monster, etc., etc. And so this is like a sort of what if, and he's very clearly cobbled together. Like it's just a head swap, but it's cute that they added it at all. And like his ending shows, Anito grown up for like a single frame. So I'm amazed they went to that much effort, but it's also got like an art gallery. If it wasn't for the fighting collection, this is like one of the best versions to go for if you want to play all of the arcade vampire games.
Yeah, because I mean, if you look at it just from a math standpoint, like this has more Darkstalkers in it than the fighting collection does, because it has all those games and it has extra stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
They could have gone with this instead of the arcade versions, but I guess they really wanted to stick with the arcade mindset, and so they went with that. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess there is no ultimate, absolutely everything Darkstalkers collection out there, but this is probably the closest you can get.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So before we get to the end, quote unquote, of Darkstalkers, I want to talk about really quickly sort of the other stuff that came up. Obviously, there was a lot of animation that came in the 90s. There was a Japanese OVA animation that I remember watching and looking very good, sort of telling the larger story.
Yeah, yeah. I actually watched that recently because it came out on Blu-ray.
Oh, please. Tell me more about it. I haven't seen it in 20 plus years.
It's basically a Night Warriors, so it's focused on the second game, so it's mostly about Morrigan, Dimitri, and Donovan. Some characters basically appear in exactly one scene and then never show up again, but it's the animation and the color choices are really good, and you do see characters doing like their special moves, as you know, because they kind of have to. But no, it's pretty all right. It's nice that it's on Blu-ray now if you want. Sadly, the American TV series is not on Blu-ray yet. A true crime.
You say sadly, but I don't have fond memories of this thing. This was, I mean,
sorry.
I guess if you're into the Street Fighter American cartoon, I guess this is right up your alley, right? Because it's just more absurdity.
I must admit, I've only seen like brief clips of it because I'm pretty sure it never aired over here. But I've heard stories of the US Darkstalkers show. We'll just leave that there.
There were plenty of comics, I think, both in Japan and America. I think they made some comics. I think there's probably still some comics going on. I want to say Udon probably made some comic interpretations, right?
I've never read them, but they did like a Street Fighter Darkstalkers crossover one a couple of years
that
ago.
Makes sense.
Which is, yeah.
Well, hey, you said the word crossover. Let's talk about crossovers because, yeah. So the first one is probably the weirdest one. So in 1995, the very next year after Darkstalkers, in Marvel Superheroes,
yes,
Anita is a hidden character in Marvel Superheroes. Just Anita.
Yep, just her on her own.
And I don't know how to explain this. I mean, the only thing I remember her about is she's got a super where she summons doll heads, right?
Yes, and that does more damage if you block it than if you just take the hits in the face. I think she's supposed to be like some kind of test character, just to mess around. It's kind of like how they threw Akuma into X-Men Children of the Atom, but she's definitely a lot weirder than Akuma was. Yeah. If you've got the delisted Marvel Superheroes re-release on PS3 and Xbox, you can unlock her in that if you want. And you can annoy people online with her.
Fantastic. So you mentioned Pocket Fighter. So there are three Darkstalkers in the Pocket Fighter game.
Yep.
Not surprisingly, it's all ladies. And there's a pattern here going forward. When Darkstalkers appear in other games, it's usually the ladies. And I think Capcom is winking at the fans like, oh, we know what you want.
It's usually Morrigan.
Yeah. To me, it's a little frustrating to me because I love these games and I love so many of these characters. And like, yes, I get it. They're sexy ladies. And yes, I'm attracted to women, but I'm not. I'm only attracted to women, and like game is more than sexy women. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of frustrating in that regards.
Characters like Sasquatch and Bishamon feel like they should have been in more games. Personally, I get why they make that choice, and you know, Morrigan is basically the poster poster character for the series,
hands down the most popular character of the series for sure.
But they were also in Super Puzzle Fighter, so I guess it sort of makes sense that they picked them. But I get you.
Yeah. So Pocket Fighter, you got Morrigan, Hisenko, and Felicia. You mentioned SNK versus Capcom on
yes,
and Pocket. That's got Morrigan. That's got Felicia and Baby Bonnie Hood.
Yeah, that's literally my introduction to BB Hood. So I'm glad that they threw her in as an extra. There was pretty recently somebody found a prototype of a sequel that did have Bishamon in it.
Oh,
so it hasn't been dumped, but there is a screenshot showing Bishamon fighting Haomaru from Samurai Showdown. Nice. So. Yes, he nearly made it. He was so close.
Cursed armor's cursed.
Yeah, definitely.
So in the Versus series, so Capcom versus SNK was unfortunately too vanilla. They just stuck with the Street Fighter and King Fighters. But Capcom SNK 2 did add Morrigan.
She was in the first one, like as a secret character. But
oh, secret, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's she's easily missed. You wouldn't be blamed for thinking it's just Street Fighter versus King of Fighters. But I think that's the game where her old sprite sticks out the most because
so many of
the other characters got redrawn and she doesn't quite fit in. It's still a great sprite, but she sticks out a little. Bless her.
Yeah, I mean, in our modern day, we talk about filters, you know, like Instagram filters. Yeah. Like Morrigan in Capcom SNK versus 2, like she is running all the filters. She's practically like it's like Vaseline on the lens. You know?
She's
really blurry. So Marvel versus Capcom, the proper series, Morrigan is there day one. She's in Marvel versus Capcom. In two, which, you know, kind of the catch-all, two ads, Anacharis and Baby Bonnie Hood and Felicia.
Yes. I love that they put Anacharis in Marvel 2. He is out of his element there. He's a big, slow guy.
Does not fit at all, but he's there because he's weird.
He's there. He's enjoying himself, I hope.
Marvel Capcom 3, the first, 3D entry in the series.
Yep.
So, of course, Morgan is there. Of course, Felicia is there. Hisanko showed up, so good for her. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And more recently, I think the game is probably done for, but Jedha showed up in Marvel's Capcom Infinite, as did Morgan. And I gotta love fans. When they announced Marvel's Capcom Infinite and they said Morgan would be in there, fans immediately edited in her old sprite into the screenshot.
They sure did.
They know.
Jedha is pretty fun in Marvel Infinite. Like, they captured... I wasn't sure if they could capture like his kind of animation style in 3D, but they did the best job that they could. Marvel Infinite is a very sad case.
Yeah, there's a lot there that we could talk about someday, but it's not retro. So we'll hold off on that. No. We'll hold off on Infinite.
Give it 25 years.
What else we have? We've got, oh, that's right. In the lone SNK version of the Versus games, SVC Chaos, they grabbed Dimitri. That was kind of a strange pull, I think. I was kind of surprised by the choice.
I know exactly why.
Why is that?
They wanted, my theory, of course, they wanted to do Midnight Bliss sprites for everyone.
Oh, of course, and they did. Oh,
they did.
That's some Galaxy Brain stuff right there. Oh, yeah.
If you wanted to see Midnight Bliss Mars people from Metal Slug 2, your wish is granted. they just color it purple and give it a bow.
Oh my god, of course, that's right.
Yeah. Another game that they probably added Dimitri in for that version is Capcom Fighting Jam.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is, so I think this game warrants its own deep discussion someday, because it is just a hot mess and so unfortunately emblematic of what fighting games were like in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. like the doldrums. Like, this is what Capcom was putting out on PS2. But yeah, that Capcom Fighting Evolution, aka Capcom Fighting Jam, basically has a grab bag of characters from a bunch of different series.
Yes.
So there's a whole Darkstalkers team, which mm-hmm. is Anacharis, Dimitri, Felicia, Jedha, and Pyron. That's right. Morrigan didn't make the cut.
Morrigan decided, no, I'm not putting that on my CV.
She refused to show up. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the in-canon reason. She stayed in her trailer.
Yeah. But yeah, they added Dimitri, and he has a Midnight Bliss animation for everyone. I think they sold Gashapon of the different Midnight Bliss designs from this game as well. So
I'm guarantee if Capcom can sell it, they sold it.
Yes. I've spent some time with Capcom Fighting Evolution. It is a turd.
I still have my copy. All these years later, I still have my copy, probably because I couldn't sell it.
Yeah. you'd frequently see it at like secondhand PS2 stores, just nobody wants to buy it. It's no. deeply unfortunate game.
And miscellaneous grab bag last of all. Okay, so, oh, Morrigan did show up in Tatsunoko vs. Capcom, which is a really fun game. I'm really disappointed that it ended up only on the Wii home ports.
I'm a huge fan. I really like Tatsunoko versus Capcom. It's very fun.
Happy and Morgan got in there.
Yes. Good for her.
Morgan also playable in the Dreamcast version of Gunbird 2,
mm-hmm.
which is like a, remind me, isn't that like a shooting game? It's like a scrolling shooter?
It's a Psycho shoot 'em up.
Right.
And Capcom published it in some territory, so they snuck Morrigan in.
And BB Hood is in Cannon Spike, but I forgot what Cannon Spike is.
That's another Psycho one, actually. It's like an arena shooter, like Smash TV,
but with a bunch of
weird, like weirdo Capcom characters, like Sir Arthur, someone who looks a lot like what's her face from Aliens versus Predator, Lin Kurosawa. It's Kurosawa, but it looks enough like her.
Okay,
and it's one of the characters from Three Wonders. Yeah,
okay,
no,
that's
no,
a
really.
Deep cut.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I've never played Cannon Spike myself because the Dreamcast port is really expensive.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the last official release of this game, honestly, which was Darkstalkers, aka Vampire Resurrection, a HD remaster Night Warriors Vampire Savior, much like in the vein of the Marvel games,
yeah,
and several other games. Capcom did a lot of this in circa, about 10 years ago. This was 2013. And it's like, here's an HD version of these two arcade games. They're download only in most territories. Here in Japan, they sold a physical version, but they sold it for twice the price just because Japan.
Yes, yes.
And obviously, it's not a complete collection, but it's like, if you had those consoles and you wanted to play some Darkstalkers, I would say very good versions of those games.
They are. They come with like little tutorials as well to sort of teach you how to play as the characters. But because it was done by Iron Galaxy, who did a bunch of Capcom ports, and it's pretty good. I would say maybe superseded by the most recent version, the Fighting Collection. But if you're really into Darkstalkers, then I would say give it a try. It's you got a couple of filters as well, and you can unlock the endings to view whenever you wish. So that's something.
And that's kind of it, which is really the sad news of the story. Because, we're coming up on 10 years since the last official Vampire release. I know it's part of the collection, but, that's not called Darkstalkers Collection. It's called Capcom Fighting Collection. So
they should have called it Darkstalkers and Friends.
That would have been good. And I think what makes this the sad part is, around the time of Darkstalkers Vampire Resurrection, there was that sort of infamous Darkstalkers is not dead tease at, I want to say, a New York Comic Con.
Yeah, there's only like off camera footage of it.
Yes.
There's no clean version of it anywhere.
And so it really seemed like Capcom, Capcom does all the time. They release old games and tease it, and it's kind of like, hey, what if you bought this old game? Ha ha ha! We might make a new one. Just kidding.
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
I really feel like the re-release, that HD remaster, was part of their strategy to build up interest for new Darkstalkers. Mm-hmm. And they teased it again with Darkstalkers Is Not Dead. And then, for whatever happened, and we may never know until someone gets Yoshi, Ono-san with Sony and Pentathol. It's like, we'll never find out what the true story is, but I think they started working on it, and I think they canceled it. That's my theory.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And here's the evidence that I offer as my theory.
Mm-hmm.
Street Fighter V has Fang. Fang is a big Chinese guy with big hopping sleeves, and he basically throws stuff out of the secret sleeves, and he can poison you. And I'm telling you, that guy started life as a 3D incarnation of Tianco. That's my theory.
Mm.
So I think they were working on a Street Fighter IV style reimagination of Darkstalkers, and either something didn't work or something didn't sell well enough, and like, well, we're not doing this now. And they canned it, and they took those animations, and they made Fang in Street Fighter V. That's my theory. I have no inside information. I do live in Osaka, but I've never been inside Capcom HQ. No one can sue me for telling my truth. But that's my personal opinion.
I never thought about that. That is a good point.
it was the first thing that came to my mind when I saw that character in a trailer. I'm like, that's a goddamn hopping corpse. That's Tianco. What the hell?
On the one hand, it's sad that there's no new Darkstalkers, but Vampire Savior is so good. How would they do a good sequel to it? That is the question.
And also, the fact is that Capcom doesn't really make 2D fighting games anymore, so it's kind of like, even if you did make a modern-style game, it wouldn't be animated the same. It would be this sort of, the new Street Fighter style, where it's all, it's all a bunch of polygon models, so they can change the costumes, and actually, speaking of costumes, right, Capcom is perfectly happy to sell you Darkstalkers costumes for other games. I'm sure Street Fighter V, I'm sure Street Fighter VI is going to have Darkstalkers costumes.
There's at least 5 Darkstalkers costumes in Street Fighter V. That's just off the top of my head.
I'm sure Dead Rising has probably got, a bunch of bobbleheads in the background. Like we couldn't go into all the cameos these characters make in other games. These are just the instances of the character actually showing up and being playable in a fighting game or adjacent fighting game.
Yeah.
Cameos out the wazoo. I know, to this day, I'm sure when you go to TGS, they're going to have Darkstalkers merch in their booth. So it's like Capcom is perfectly happy to sell these things to you on items, but they don't want to invest in making a new Darkstalkers game, which I find really sad. But as you said, would a new one be even that great? I don't know, but I still wish they'd try. I still feel like this series.
Yeah.
I guess the best case scenario, honestly, would be hire whoever the madmen are who make Guilty Gear these days, where it's like, oh, it's a 3D game, but it looks like anime. Like, you have to hire those people. It's like, okay, make us a new Darkstalkers. That would be worth it. But I think they're busy making Guilty Gears.
The other company I'd think of is the people who make, French Bread, Under Night in Birth, and that sort of thing.
Those wonderful doujin fighting games. Yeah, those people are keeping the flames of 2D alive. That's true.
For sure. For sure.
Capcom could hire them, but that would cost money.
Yeah, yes.
So yeah, I think Darkstalkers is dead, but in a way, it's undead, so it lives forever, right?
Yeah. It lives forever in our hearts. And on the Capcom fighting games. Yes. Yes.
So let's take comfort in knowing that Capcom at least remembered they had those ROMs and was willing to sell them to us. So thank you, Capcom. Yeah.
Thank you
very much. And thank you, Ant, for joining me on this conversation.
You're very welcome. I will happily talk about Darkstalkers for multiple hours.
The idea was to have you join the show as part of a panel of other established guests, but unfortunately some scheduling conflicts came up at the last second. Mm-hmm. So just you and me, thank you very much for carrying so much water on your Retronauts debut.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Please let people know more about you and what you do and where you're on the internet, because I feel you do a lot of work out there. I'd like people to know what you're up to.
Thank you. Okay, so I write a tiny little website called gaminghell.co.uk, where I just write about old games that I like. there's no real sort of system for picking what I write about. So, this month I wrote about Konami's Vendetta. A couple of months ago I wrote about Paneled Upon. Anything can show up. So that's gaminghell.co.uk. And I've started streaming recently. Somehow, there's no rhyme or reason to it. I just pick stuff that I'm interested in and I can talk about for multiple hours. So that's twitch.tv/tepidsnake. And if you go there, you get to see, I have a Pingtuber, which is just an MS Paint drawing that I cracked out in about 2 minutes. But yeah, that's most of the things I'm doing on the internet. Please look forward to my website updating every month, maybe, if you're lucky. Who knows?
I have to ask.
Yes, go ahead.
So what's gaminghell.com if you've got the .co.uk?
I have no idea. I just picked up the .co.uk because...
It's probably porn then.
Probably, yes. No, it's to make sure people know that I'm from Britain so that they know that I'm not spelling words wrong. It's that's we add those extra U's on purpose.
I appreciate that gesture.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a Twitter? Do people want to find you on Twitter?
I do. Oh boy. It's Sarah S. Sowerty. That's Sowerty. Gaming Hell has a little mascot. Is just a girl who likes games, and all the permutations of Gaming Hell were already taken. So I thought, why don't I use my mascot? That's a good idea and won't be awkward to say it out loud in a podcast years from now.
Well, that's right. So, we'll link to that Twitter, of course, when we tweet this episode. So people will see. Thank
you. Good.
But to listeners, just listening out there, take careful notes. They said all the words, so,
Yeah, I did. Okay. Again, thank you very much for having me. I don't do podcasts very often, but this was nice. And I get to talk about Darkstalkers for a couple hours. That's all right with me.
That was my secret plan all along. I wanted to talk to Darkstalkers for hours, and I'm happy I found someone who also was willing to do that.
Happy to be of assistance.
So let's wrap up the show by talking about Retronauts. This is Retronauts. You've listened to Retronauts. Thank you for listening to Retronauts. Thank you for supporting Retronauts, because we exist because you support us. You can do that by going to patreon.com/retronauts for $3 a month. You get episodes 1 week early in advance, and you get higher quality audio. For $5 a month, which is just $2 more, come on, that's nothing. What you get two bonus episodes every month, exclusive episodes that never go live on the other feed, and you get exclusive weekly columns from me. I write the columns, and then I read them to you as mini podcasts. this is great. It's $5 a month. Come on. You know you want to give me $5 a month. Give us $5 a month. It goes to me, you know, trickle down. As for me personally, I've been Diamond Fight. You can find me on Twitter and Twitch as Fight Club, F-E-I-T, that's my last name, C-L-U-B, that's a noun or a verb that you've probably heard of before.
And they say podcasts aren't educational.
I'm doing my part. So we've reached the end of the show. So what's your Midnight Bliss look? Go.
Set of pajamas.
I think that's taken. I'm probably wearing a Jill Valentine Resident Evil 5 bodysuit minus the mind control computer on my breasts.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Good night.
Good night.